We are recording.
Thank you. Good evening. Welcome. I'm Sean Brennan, president of the Delaware State Board of Education. I call December 11th regular meeting to order. It is 5 p.m. The meeting is open to the public in the town's building and electronically via Zoom. The Delaware State Board of Education published the public meeting notice and meeting information on December 4th on the state public meeting calendar website. Thank you for your patience if we run into any technology issues as we simultaneously conduct this meeting in person and electronically. Today's agenda contains two opportunities for public comment. There is time allotted for regulations and then for general public comment near the end of the meeting. Sign-up sheets are available on the table by the door. If you did not previously sign up to provide public comment via email and are logged in through the meeting URL, please type your name, organization, and comment topic in the chat box now. If you've joined through the call-in option and wish to make verbal public comment, please log in online through the meeting URL. As required by statute, this meeting is being recorded and the recording will be available on our web page within 7 business days of this meeting. When voting on items for action, I will ask all those in favor, say aye, and we'll only do a roll call if there's a dissent. Also, as a reminder, when speaking or making a motion, please state your name. Roll call of the SBE members, Mrs. Lawani.
Mr. Brittingham.
Present.
Dr. Griffin.
Present.
Mr. Gunter.
Present.
Dr. Latavia.
Present.
Reverend Powell. Mr. Simmons.
Present.
Ms. Stevens.
Present.
Dr. Zavo.
Present.
We have a card, sir.
Thank you. I will note that we also had the board's executive secretary, Cindy Martin, deputy attorney general, Alex Corbin, and state board staff, Kathleen Smith and Princess Luwani, participating in today's meeting. The board's agenda was posted on December 4th. Are there any changes to the agenda, Ms. Smith?
There are not.
Is there a motion to approve the agenda for today's meeting as presented?
Simmons so moved.
Simmons has made a motion. I need a second.
Griffin second.
Griffin has second. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Approval of the November 20th regular meeting minutes. The November 20th regular meeting minutes were provided to the board for review in advance of this meeting. Are there any additions? If there are no additions or deletions, is there a motion to approve the November 20th regular meeting minutes as presented?
So moved, Stevens.
Stevens has made a motion. I need a second.
Simmons
has seconded. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Javier has abstained. Thank you. Charter school updates. It is for information. Leroy Travers, director of the charter school office, is here this evening to provide updates. Mr. Travers, anything else you'd like to share with us other than what you had on your...
Well, before we get into the action items, I do want to provide just a quick update on one item, and that is the Aspira Georgetown. So they did submit a minor modification request to delay the opening of their school for 1 year. At the time of this report, the secretary was reviewing the application. She has since approved that application for them to delay opening for 1 year.
You're added, you say?
One more. And that's a one-time delay. By statute, schools may receive a one-time delay in opening. However, if they cannot open by the next September 15th, it's an automatic forfeiture of the charter. That would be an opening in 2027.
Okay. But that's our one time.
One time.
All
one
right, time delay. Don't carry on.
So with that, we do have some action items for the board. I think we'll start with Secretary Martin and her request for assent to her renewal decisions.
Want to do campus community school first? Okay. Hi there. So after reviewing the Charter School Accountability Committee's recommendation and the full public record, I'm approving the renewal application for campus community school, and that will be for a period of 5 years. The renewal is going to include one condition, that the school meets standard in all of the curricular areas prior to the expiration of its current charter, which will be on June 30th, 2026. And my request is for the state board's assent to that decision
for
campus community school.
Are there any questions or comments from the board? If not, is there a motion to assent to the secretary's decision regarding the charter renewal for Campus Community Charter School?
Griffin, so moved.
Griffin's made a motion. I need a second.
Simmons, second.
Simmons has seconded. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Providence Creek Academy renewal for action.
For that one, again, after reviewing the Charter School Accountability Committee's recommendation and the full public record, I'm approving the renewal application for Providence Creek Academy, and that will also be for a period of 5 years without conditions, and request the State Board's assent to that decision.
Any questions? I will entertain a motion to assent to the Secretary's decision regarding the charter renewal for Providence Creek Academy.
So moved, Stevens.
Stevens has made a motion. I need a second.
Griffin, second.
Griffin has seconded. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstention? The motion carries. Before we go to the next item, I'd like to thank Dr. LaJavia for joining me when and doing these charter schools this time. It was a pleasure, but it was a much better system, I think, this time, and I enjoyed it.
Good, good. And thank you to both you and the entire State Board for your role in the process. It's a very important process, as you guys know, and it's also a great opportunity to learn not only about our charter schools, but the process that they go through every 5 years to ensure that they're meeting the needs of our students. So we thank you and look forward to next year. We only have one, so you guys have to flip a coin for it.
We're going to pick somebody. Next is on the agenda is the Brian Allen Stevenson School of Excellence formal review for action. Secretary Martin.
Yes, for this one, the Department of Education is recommending that BASE's charter undergo a formal review process that's based on the concerns that we have related to enrollment and to also to the resulting financial impact that's connected to that. The school is currently enrolled at 123 students. That's approximately 35% of its authorized enrollment, which raises concerns about its long-term financial viability, the sustainability, as well as its ability to meet the terms of its charter. And this is pursuant to Delaware Code 14511C. I request State Board's assent to place BASE under formal review. And Leroy can get into some more of the details on this.
I would love to hear it. Action plan by Brian Allen Stevenson.
Well, so
an action plan. I'd like to hear what they're.
Yeah, so that would be part. I think it's important to just kind of understand what we're asking for tonight, and you know how that process looks. To use an analogy, the check engine light's on at the school, and we're just asking that you allow us and the Charter School Accountability Committee to open up the hood and see what's really going on in there. So as far as like some of the details, those things will come out during the formal review should you assent to it. This will allow CSAC to take a better look. So an action plan would certainly be something that the Charter School Accountability Committee would ask for, either during the process or afterwards if they don't have one already.
Go ahead.
I'm curious, though, are they currently under any financial distress with only a 35% enrollment figure? That's pretty low.
Right. And that's what we want to take a deeper look at. And the formal review allows us to take a closer look at them financially, a more detailed look at their financials than what we currently have. We received a budget from them, which CSAC will get to take a look at, which was balanced for the year. But as we know, a budget's only as good as, you know, how well you stick to it. So again, that's kind of what we want to take a look at with CSAC is to make sure that they can cover their financial obligations, not just currently, but for the remainder of the year and into future years.
Go ahead, Mayor.
Were there any clues that they were headed in this direction as they were ramping up and getting their commitments from students?
There were. I mean, it's obvious because we placed them under formal review before they opened, right? So there were some concerns there. The department asked for a formal review. We conducted a formal review, and in that time, they were able to meet their enrollment. The issues that they're facing now occurred really over a short period of time, within the last 6 to 8 months, where students have exercised their right to choice and leave. So that's what leaves them where they are now with the 123 students.
Do you give them the criteria that they use to remediate these concerns, or is that something that comes from them? Where is that driven by?
So that's a good question. That comes from the school. However, one of the outcomes of this formal review could be, and I'll go through the outcomes, could be that we give them some criteria, right? So so the outcomes from formal review, there are really three outcomes. One is to take no action against the school at all. Another is to provide them with conditions that would trigger like a probation. So if you'll remember, when you first joined the board, Dr. Latavia, every month I would report on another school's conditions. And that came out of a formal review. They had to meet certain targets by certain times. So that's another option. And a third option would be an unfortunate school closure. So those are the three options that CSAC will recommend to the secretary, and the secretary will present to you one of those three options at your March meeting.
March meeting. Okay. That was my next question, but are there any more questions for Mr. Travers? If not, I'll entertain a motion to assent to the secretary's decision to begin a formal review of Brian Allison Stevens School of Excellence.
So moved, Stevens.
Stevens has made a motion. I need a second.
LaJavia second.
LaJavia has seconded. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you, Mr. Travers.
Sure. Just a real quick, as next steps, we'll now provide the school with official notice and begin working on a calendar. And I'll work with Ms. Smith to identify at least one member of the state board to serve on the committee.
We're safe to assume that they knew that this was coming tonight, so they're anticipating the outcome of this.
Yes, yes.
Thank you, sir.
Well, thank you.
Next on our agenda, regulations, professional standards board for regulations for discussion or action. Dr. Linnea Bradshaw, executive director of professional standards board, please step up.
Hello, everyone. Good evening.
Good evening.
Nice to be here in front of you again.
Be here with you. Regulation 1524, classroom aid permit. It is for action.
So classroom aid permit was published during the month of November. It received two comments. One that was just a generic comment, and the other one was from the State Council of Persons with Disabilities. They did make four recommendations. The board looked at the recommendations, looked at what is generally in statute, and decided to take no further action on those recommendations, and voted to forward the regulation to the state board. If anyone has any questions about that, I'd be more than happy to answer.
Any questions for Dr. Bradshaw? Okay. Is there a motion regarding Regulation 1524?
I move that we approve Regulation 1524 as presented.
Stevens has made a motion. I need a second.
Simmons second.
Simmons is seconded. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstention? The motion carries.
LaJavia
abstains. Okay, Regulation 1503, Comprehensive Educator Induction Program for Information.
So this regulation had a complete overhaul. I think it was about a year and a half ago. The Comprehensive Educator Induction Program had a complete overhaul. This is cleanup from the first year of implementation. And we needed to standardize some definitions between this regulation and Regulation 1501, and they needed to be standardized with each other. And so you'll see lots of language changes there, although there isn't a whole lot of change in practice. There are just a few things that when I worked with Dr. Green, she had identified as weaknesses. We just needed to set a minimum of the monthly meetings that people needed to make in order to progress, or in order to have mentoring counted. There were a couple of last minute tweaks to the regulation for board members, just to make sure that we have a program that is focused on retention and is educator friendly. And that was mainly just about if we can ensure that people have the same coach between years of 1 and 2. That doesn't happen. It can't happen a lot of times. But if it's possible to happen, that people aren't, I don't want to say forcibly separated. That sounds like, you know, something draconian, which doesn't happen. But so there's really just some minor tweaks in the regulation. Is there any questions about the provisions?
Any questions from anybody? Regulation 1517, then, paraeducator permit, it is for information.
The paraeducator permit, this does have some just updates, but it also, the biggest revision is in section 6.0, which is the introduction of a behavior intervention paraeducator permit. And so we found that this is a necessary addition because there are many, many paraeducators who are working as behavior interventionists in Delaware schools. Some of them are trained, some of them are not trained. And we just felt like it was necessary to put a minimum amount of a 40-hour training in any one of the six areas that are listed in 6.2.3, trauma-informed practices, positive behavior supports, applied behavior analysis, et cetera, so that we can ensure that those working with students with behavior needs actually have the training that they need to do it well. And not that everybody who is working with student behavior is a paraeducator. And that's really important to understand. In a few months, there'll be another regulation coming toward you. There are two regulations that work in tandem. So if you have a bachelor's or higher, say in something, then you will be treated as a professional educator rather than a paraeducator. But if you have either a high school diploma or instructional paraeducator permit, then you can get the behavior intervention paraeducator. These two things work in tandem to make sure that the folks have a credential. The behavior intervention space is a space where we have a lot of folks working without any credentials at all. And that is something that HB 97 was designed to eliminate.
Any questions for Dr. Bradshaw?
Yeah, I've got one.
Go ahead.
Where would they get the 40 hours of training? Who provides that?
So we looked at training that is provided at DOE already. So like free trainings that happen. There is more than 40 hours of training in those six areas. Right now, the training that's available is a little more ad hoc. And then there are districts that a lot of districts do training in these areas. And so they can combine district level training with state training that's available. But we're also looking within the student support team, they are looking at creating a model of a 40-hour, like an online on-demand model, so that this training would be comprehensive, accessible, clear, that someone didn't have to ad hoc it constantly. In addition to that, one can pursue training as a registered behavior technician through the Behavior Analyst Certification Board. That training is 40 hours. It generally does cost money, although there are some low-cost options for that. That is also applicable to this. But we are working on something that is really specific for this. It hasn't been developed yet, but there is currently enough right now to tide us over.
So you're not seeing any problem for them to get it completed by August
so
of
there
2027?
Is, well, if you no, because this regulation will go into effect August 1st, 2026.
Okay.
And so that an individual who is working in that space as of August 1st, 2026, has an entire year to get those 40 hours, and there should not be any issues with that. With that piece of it. And we did, we built that on-ramp intentionally with the feedback from LEAs to make sure that people would be able to achieve it.
So I think I have a follow-up question to that statement. So if this training and to ensure that the job is being performed correctly, if they have a year to perform, to complete it, what happens in the interim should something go wrong? Does that, I guess maybe let me,
right. I mean,
does that put us in a, put LEAs in a?
Well, the only thing that I would say about that is that it's an, it will, if we're in a better position with this than we are now, which is no training, no credentials for these individuals sometimes. Now, a lot of them are credentialed as behavior educators. Some, and there are a lot of people who work in school discipline who are credentialed educators, like licensed and certified. There is a concern about what happens in the interim if they don't have completed training. Yet this is a step in the right direction. I don't have an answer for that because we need to build an on-ramp, if that makes sense. And we can't, I don't want to build it before we have the regulation in place.
It just, it's a little concerning from a leadership position where we're putting something in place to safeguard, but it's not in place. While it's not in place, what are our safeguards, right? Or and does, and then my second question would be, maybe it's tied together, those other folks working in that area that have the four-year degree, do they, are they required to have the four-year training or the 40-hour training?
They are required, and this will go, they are required to have like a bachelor's degree and a certain, in there's going to be a list of areas in which you can have a bachelor's degree. They're not required to have the 40-hour training because they presumably will get that as part of their education. Does that make sense? Although I would hope that districts would.
It makes sense on paper. I don't know that it makes sense to me in actual workspace, right? Like, because like even the way you framed, we would hope that in their degree they have that training. I'm just concerned that we're setting districts and or leaders in a bad spot if they have someone who does something, obviously. And then now, what's their protection under these, with this, I'm going to say interim, until we get this in place?
Well, the only thing that I would say is we have the protection of someone actually having a credential. Because when someone is working in this space without a credential, and they commit misconduct, while the school may separate them from service, there's no further action that happens. If it's not like actual criminal conduct. And a credential gives the department the authority to revoke that credential or limit that credential or suspend that credential for reasons that do not rise to the level of criminal conduct.
And then lastly, for those bachelor, four-year degree bachelors in that space, is there some, and maybe this isn't appropriate, is there some checking that they actually do have that given the fact that they don't have to do this 40 hours? Like, what is the safeguard that whatever they've gotten their bachelor that they, we hope that they had, is there a safeguard that they have that as well?
So currently, and this is a draft that has not come before you, it's not a draft that's final. Currently, there isn't a safeguard of particular training, although there are certain LEA mandatory trainings that all individuals need to go through, and individuals in this space, I think. And maybe Megan, you can help me on this, the restraint training, the all the like the different trainings on how to work with kids with behaviors. Those, so there are some of those mandatory state trainings. There, it's not a full 40 hours, but it, there are trainings that happen for for staff. They do have to go through that mandatory. And this is a difficult space, because I'll be honest, I sit here in front of you and you're worried about people not having enough training. And when I present to others, there's a sense that we would try to credential someone at all. And no, so finding that sweet spot is tricky.
Yeah, mine wasn't around whether there's enough or right or wrong. Right. Mine's more around when you work in that space, things spiral really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And you could end up, or someone could end up in a spot unintentionally, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, even if you have the training, like we've been there, right? Like, and so we've seen where, like, you're like, ruh-roh, like, and then now we're saying that we're relying on 40 hours of training for some. We hope they got it in another. And I just don't know that we have a safeguard. And I'll say that for the LEA, for the student, and for the employee, I don't know that there's enough safeguards, because it can spiral so quickly in the moment. That's my concern. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? Regulation 1523, long-term substitute permit. It is for information.
So we have, we have a situation where we have a lot of long-term subs working in schools. We have full-time subs working in schools. So we have substitutes that are hired pension eligible as building subs in schools. And to this point, we haven't credentialed any substitutes whatsoever. We have miscellaneous daily subs. And this was a compromise. Originally, I think when this legislation was being written, the idea was that substitutes would have a permit. This was negotiated to long-term substitutes. So any substitute who is working 12 weeks or longer. So if you're in planning to have someone filling a parental leave, for example, that substitute would need to have a permit. And anyone who's working full-time in a school as a substitute would need a permit. And this is another balancing act between going too far and not going far enough, because there are some that say this doesn't go far enough. And there are some that are saying it goes too far. And so it's a delicate balancing act that we do a long-term substitute permit for anyone who is working or planning to work. So if you're planning to work a parental leave of 12 weeks, you should be applying for this permit.
Linnea, is a long-term sub, it's usually planned ahead of time? Like, do you know ahead of time?
Most of the time when it's, certainly not if it's a medical leave.
Okay.
But obviously parental leaves, usually people know they're going out. They have an approximate date when they're going out. And so there would also be provisions that people can, for example, you are subbing for somebody for a few days, and then suddenly we realize that person's going to be out for a month, 2 months, 3 months. They can apply at that time and be granted that. This is not something that is not like, unlike other licensure and certification, it's not quite as defined.
So if it's planned, it's fine. But if it's not planned, it's still to go through this process.
You would go through the process just probably after you've been subbing for a little while.
I probably recommend that if you're going to sub, just go ahead and do this. Is this what you're after?
Or? Honestly, that's what I would recommend for people. Most subs, if they are qualified, people do prize stable positions, for 3-4 months, something like that. And so there are a lot of subs that do, like if you're an elementary substitute, you might go from parental leave to parental leave to parental leave, and that's what you do. Like, that's a
long-term needs permit. Now, what do you say about full-time subs?
I mean, full-time is also long-term. So a full-time substitute would fall into this.
Okay.
Would it apply to, you mentioned a pension eligible educator who goes back to do this, would they still need to get?
I think if they do not have, if they don't have a license anymore, Possibly.
That's a good question. Like, do I have a license? I'm retired. I don't even know. Do they take my license away when I retire?
They don't take your license away.
Let's check.
So it's possible. I mean, the one thing that does happen a lot that is that can be difficult is that, say you retired. If your email address in Deeds is your DOE email address, it might have expired and you didn't get notified. Okay, if you didn't change your email address to a personal email address. That's the only thing I would say is that could have happened to you.
Okay.
Now.
With no worries, I don't want to have any desire to be a long-term sub. I'm just.
Right, right. But this is not designed to be difficult to get. And if you have had a license in the past in Delaware, you're automatically with, you know, as long as you do the criminal affirmation.
Okay.
Then that is something that.
We put it out of class, Jim.
Yeah.
No worries. I was asking for other folks.
Asking for.
I was asking for Deb.
Sure.
Okay. Any questions for Dr. Bradshaw? Thank you. Have a good evening.
Thank you.
Delaware Department of Education regulations for discussion or action. Juliet Borowski, Director of Delaware Higher Education Office, will present 5 regulations for information.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I'm very happy to be able to present to you regulations tonight for information. There are a number of regulations that are being repealed. So Regulation 1210, the Scholarship Incentive Program, Regulation 1216, the Educator Support Scholarship Program, Regulation 1217, Mental Health Services Scholarship Program are being repealed because these programs have been consolidated into one regulation, 1211, which was approved by this board last month. The other regulations, Regulation 1218, the Mental Health Services Student Loan Repayment Program, Regulation 1213, Speech Language Pathologist Student Loan Repayment Program, are being repealed because these were also consolidated into one regulation, Regulation 1215, which was approved by this board last month. Happy to be able to answer any questions for you.
Sure. So 1213, 1218 are now 1215. 1216, 1217 are now 1211. Is that correct?
1218, 1213 are now 1215.
15, yes.
1210, 1216, and 10. 1217 are now 1211.
Got it. All right. I missed 1210. Any questions for? Got it.
Awesome.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
You too.
They will be for action next month, I'm sure. Okay. Public comment on regulations. Time has been set aside at this point in the agenda for public comment on regulations. Ms. Smith, do we have anyone signed up for public comment on regulations?
I'm checking right at the moment.
Appreciate it.
Not on regulations at this time.
Outstanding. State Board Business, Executive Director's Report. Ms. Smith, you're up.
Yeah. Despite the shortened amount of time between the last meeting and this meeting, it was quite a busy time, and I did have a couple of meetings after I'd submitted the report. I was very excited to meet with Laurie Girardi of the Home Library Project. I was on a meeting with the Delaware Readiness Team's literacy working group, and she presented on her home library project with the tagline, "Book Ownership Changes Everything." She's known Jim Simmons for years.
I met with her today.
Yes, Secretary Martin's a big fan.
Huge fan, I'll tell you.
And when she talked about literacy and the cost of inaction, that immediately reminded me of Dr. Griffin's mention at the last meeting of the movie Sentenced. And so Laurie is familiar with that work as well. She would love to come and meet with the board if you're at all interested in hearing a little bit more and seeing if there's opportunity to partner and continue advocacy and championing, maybe at a future workshop meeting or a planning meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes, that would be great. That'd be great.
Yep, she offered to do that. So I can send you more information tomorrow too. And that's it. Thank you.
Any questions for Ms. Smith? Well, I think all of us are interested on follow on that.
Okay, thank you.
Jim met with her today. I think you said today, was it?
Yeah, we had bounced around some dates for a while. We initially met maybe 6 years ago with I want to say it's called Bernie's Book Bank. Bernie's, something like that. But it was same concept of providing books for students. In our conversation today, she mentioned that she partnered with them and then kind of got her own offshoot because of some things that she thought should be handled a little differently. I don't know if it was that it was good or bad. It was just that she saw a different vision. And so that's where the whole libraries project started. I thought it was very interesting in terms of getting books. Even the research that says just having, because one of my questions was, just having the books, like if you have a book that's right there, how's that going to help? But the research says having the books, having the option to have that book there, improve the chances of reading, even though whether you have parent support or lesser parent support, I don't necessarily think parents don't support. So that was interesting for me to hear that today, because that was one of our questions. Put 5 or 10 books in someone's house and they never open them. But it's the research suggests that if they're there, there's a better chance that they'll interesting data and research. I can't speak to it as well as she did today. And so I do have her deck that she shared with me. So if you don't have it, I can share with you to share.
She did say I could share her deck with the board.
Okay.
Her body of work is absolutely brilliant and needed.
Inspiring.
When I met her, I'm like, it's a full circle moment, because when I was a principal in an inner city school, that was my dream, is a bookshelf next to everybody's bed, because they were learning how to read in school, but they were going home to book deserts. And if they don't have books next to their bed, they're behind. And you think about kids that come from different environments, they have bookshelves. They have books scattered all around the place. And I would go into the homes and they didn't have them. But there is research to back it up. And she's got a scalable model that Delaware needs. I think it's incredible.
Absolutely.
Probably not supposed to be advocating on one program or another, but I can vouch for it from my own experience as a literacy specialist. It's a game changer. And I've been clear that the literacy emergency is addressed in Delaware through tier one instruction in the classroom. First and foremost, that is what we need to do. And that is what the department's working on. But you don't just do that. Saturate the community with high quality literature, put books everywhere, and initiate kids into what researcher Frank Smith calls the literacy club. You're not in the literacy club if you don't have a book at home. Saturate. Sure.
On a similar note, while at NASB, I met with Sarah Rich, who runs a program called Just Right Reader. And the interesting thing that I did connect her to Christina, they have a holiday break or winter break program that sends, it's like a pilot, she called it, where 500 families are chosen and selected to receive a packet of books that is individually packaged. So it would come to gym. And then it takes my student data, and the packet of books is built upon my deficiencies, like whether it's decoding or whatever. And then there's 3 packets, I think every 6 weeks or 8 weeks, I don't have it in front of me. And so Sarah Rich's team met with Christina, and they're looking to pilot it in the city of Wilmington. So I don't know where it stands as of now, because I think that there was, you know, by the time we find out, it was Thanksgiving the next week, whether they were going to get it in time for winter break or not. But then I did suggest to her team and to Christina's leadership that look at this timeline from a and backwards map, so that it's in place before they start testing, because allegedly, I haven't seen all the data, suggests that it accelerates their learning 8 times faster than the normal procedure, because the books are written specifically to that student's deficiency. So where that stands, I don't know to this date. I can reach out to Christina and let you guys know.
I'm familiar with that program.
Yeah, Sarah actually sent a starter pack to my niece who's just learning to read, and it is customized to her, which was fantastic.
That's quite a task to go to somebody what they need help with. Very impressive things to hear. All righty, I'm going to move on next to committee and meeting reports. Written reports were made available on eboard. If you have anything further to share, that'd be great. I'll just start with, I was tardy to the UD vote for the new president. Nisha was there. She was on time. I'd like to congratulate, oh my gosh,
Laura
Carlson. Thank you. On what a big and important job this is for our state. I think she'll do well. I mean, she's impressed me every time I've talked to her. It's not been much, but I'm happy that it was from within, somebody to understand the system. Even though she was at Notre Dame, what, 25 years? And then she's been here for, I don't know how many years, Nisha, but
five.
You can follow up on that if you want, but I think it's a great thing for the University of Delaware. That's all I have to report. Deb?
Well, you can see from my report, I did have the honor of attending the ESP of the Year Award dinner. And as always, it was a wonderful event. I was able to convey our congratulations to all of the nominees there that evening and got to see the nominee that won, Donna Ward, who is a guidance secretary from the Laurel School District. But
Sussex,
I'll tell you,
Sussex County.
But just seeing the synopsis of what each and every education support professional is doing in their schools, it was just so inspiring. I don't envy the selection committee, the job of, you know, finding the top person, because they were all outstanding. It was also my privilege to sit with this year, last year's winner, Melissa, and Rebel. Rebel joined us at the table. If you haven't met Rebel, Rebel is a lovely dog, a huge, sweet lab, and does some outstanding work with special needs students in the elementary school where Melissa works. And so she has invited any of us that would like to come down and see her and Rebel at work. So if you're interested, let me know and we can schedule a visit.
We're voting for them to go on CBS this morning, remember?
Yes,
we think
definitely want to get.
It's like one of those stories that should be featured on one of those, like, feel good, like, she's what she does and how she's tied it to student learning is beyond just the therapy dog part of it. She's connected it to literacy and having the dogs reading high frequency words. It's amazing.
I have his playing card. She did give me one of his playing cards before I left. Other than that, it's been all things wedding since the beginning of the month. Last week, Sean and I met briefly with the leaders from the Reading Consortium. They wanted to update us with the change in the timeline, indicating that January was not when we would receive their recommendations, but it would now be February when we would receive their recommendations. They also suggested or asked, would we be interested in co-sponsoring public meetings during the 90-day consideration period that we have once we get the recommendations. And we had indicated this was something that would have to be decided by the full board before we would make any commitment to do the public meetings. But, you know, put that in the back of your mind of, you know, do we want to co-sponsor with Reading, similar to the meetings that they've been having this week and last week in the various districts that will be impacted. They have been holding meetings with the school boards and with the public in each and every district that's there. I had the opportunity to listen in to the Christina school board meeting last week and the Brandywine school board meeting this week. And then last night had an opportunity to listen to Colonial and played the recording for the Red Clay meeting. There were some common themes that came out during those meetings. One theme being that people raised the issue of not having enough financial information to really understand what the financial impact would be for each of the models that they're considering. Two, there was concerns raised regarding would consolidation have a significant impact on choice? Would it have a significant impact on special education students? And again, a lot of the details around what things would look like have not yet been determined and won't be determined until a model has been chosen and they start building the plan. And that was reiterated throughout the four meetings that have been held so far. I'll leave it at that. The
other common theme was the inclusion of charters in the plan and what would that look like.
Yeah.
I think Senator Lochman and Representative Chipotle alluded that, that's a conversation once a plan is made to then see how that will, I'm going to say, play out in terms of what that impact would be.
Mm-hmm.
And then around the financial reports, they were waiting for a report from AIR. Yeah. And that report, I have it in the inbox. I just saw it, but I have
it. Has come in.
It was due. They thought it was going to get it by close of business today. So to my inbox, I have not obviously had a chance to look at it.
Thank you. Something to think about if we want to co-sponsor meetings. I'm not sure if I'm sold on that since we're making the last decision on how this will work at the end. I like to keep ourselves separate from it, but that's my opinion. Like say we're the last vote, I think we should be separated from them and do it. I won't say the proper way, but the way I think we should do it. I'm open for suggestions now if anybody has one. Jim?
I was just thinking it would be a good idea to hear what other people have to say if we're the ones making the final decision, just to hear everyone's.
Oh, I want to hear. I just don't want to partner with them when I'm going to be making that final decision.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to hear what everybody has to say because this is going to be right here with us to take care of,
mm-hmm.
as being, and whenever it comes to us, fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, after what I've seen at the number of meetings that we've had so far, I would be opposed at partnering with them to have those meetings. I think what I heard in a lot of meetings were people framing things around some way, some different way of saying we don't want to help those children, and that becomes a frustration. They frame their concern in a manner that ultimately suggests we don't want to help those children. Put that help on someone else.
Some of that was said explicitly.
Some of it was said explicitly, but even the ones that didn't say it explicitly, there were some explicit comments. Even the other ones, their comments don't even, they're almost misinformed, so they're making a comment. Like, so for example, like, what does this have to do with reassessment? Like, what? Like, have you read it? So it's just another way to me to detract, and let's keep putting things in the way so we can kick the can down the road. Like, the can's been kicked for, in my opinion, at least 25 years, I'd argue 47 years. And so I just feel like we've gotten here, we've been here before with WEAC. Was WEAC that made the recommendation? So we've been there before and the can got kicked again. And I just feel like that's the goal. I keep feeling like it's to kick the can. And I guess I'll say it around this one. They keep asking why. The answer is that there was a decision that says that nationally there's four districts, I think, in the country that are discontinuous. So we've decided there was a vote that says that we didn't want that in our state anymore. And so now that we've got to find a place for those students. And the answer can't be we don't want. So the answer why, we know why. We have to do something with relocation of those students, and that is redistricting. So,
I said I wasn't going to say anything about this tonight.
Yeah, so if you have to beg.
Don't say it. I'm going to drag it out of you somehow.
We want to hear it.
That decision was made by the initial group that was put together by Governor Markell. We've known now then for more than a decade that Christina is one of four discontinuous school districts in the country. The decision was made then that Christina needed to move, and then the two districts that were being considered in one way or another said, not in my backyard. So here we are again, and let's not even talk about the groups that did the work to consider the same, which is why we're talking about a river plan. That didn't come from WEAC or WEAC. That came from a prior group that looked at what are we going to do with education in Wilmington. So if you ask Griffin, we've been dealing with this problem since 1954. 1968 exacerbated the problem. And now we are trying to do all of these things that keep coming back to the same thing, that quite frankly, as a brown person who grew up in Wilmington, are quite frightening to me. That is 2025. And I listened to some of the comments that were being made publicly last week that literally made me ask, am I my parents or my grandparents? Because some of the people who said some of the things they said were not, they weren't dog whistles, they were bullhorns. And I said, you're my age. I was in the sixth grade when the DSEG order was made. My seventh grade year was desegregated. I don't have the fuzzy memories that I heard in that room. And I grew up in the Brandywine School District. I grew up in Wilmington Public Schools that then became the Brandywine School District. But to know that you experienced it, and then to hear some of the things that were being said that were basically, let those, and I'm going to say it the way I interpreted it, let those people in Wilmington figure it out for themselves. We made the choice to be here. And so this is ours. That's what happened with WEAC. It's what happened with WEAC. It's what happened with the group before. And quite frankly, statute says this board needs to decide redistricting. So the fact that there have been other groups that have been given it that are going to make the decision and then bring it to us. And remember, our decision isn't to make a decision about redistricting. It's to make a decision on the plan that they decide to bring to us. And then I think we are not the final vote, because it comes to us. We decide, and then it goes to the General Assembly. So literally, if you look at Title 14, what it says is that redistricting belongs to the state board, except for Reading, because now we've come up with another body that will do what this body is supposed to do. I'm going to say here what I said the very first time I sat in a room and had been asked by the then governor to serve on, I don't remember which came first, WEAC or WEAC, I was on both of them. I asked in that room with people, members of the General Assembly in the room, is there the political will in Dover to do what needs to be done for kids? Because when grown folks sit around tables that are shaped like this, everybody represents their silo, and nobody understands that our client is that child. And as long as we keep, think about it, I am 59 years old. I like that. We'll talk about that on the way home. This has been the whole of my life. And so there's a child right now in the second grade in Wilmington who is waiting on grown folk to make a decision that's going to impact them. And as we push it off for 5 years, they're now in the seventh grade. And what we're saying they're not getting now, they will not have gotten for 5 years while grown folk are trying to make a decision. Watch, that fits them. What I heard in that room was people who believe that public education is a privilege. Somebody even said, it's a privilege. It's not a privilege. It's a human right. And the fact, yeah, I can't wait until it comes to us. I don't think that we should co-host with Reading. Not that I have anything against Reading, but I think that it only exacerbates what people said in that room, which is you're trying to jam something down our throats. So while we will take their work product and do our own work, I think we need to make sure that it appears that we're doing our own work because we are. I don't think that we should not have public forums. The problem is they've had public forums and they've had like 5, 6 years. We've got 90 days. So even if we have a public forum every month in those 90 days, when do we get to actually then distill all the information that we get in those 90 days to make our decision? Griffin, I think it's a shame that we only get 90 days when they've had 5 years. That's just me. But that's the way it's written. I think we do have an opportunity to ask for more time if we need it. I intend to ask for more time because the thing to come, and I'm not talking about another 5 years, might be another 5 weeks. But what comes after this is the cynic in me, and my vocation says I'm not a cynic. The cynic in me says, then they're going to take 15 years to do what we're going to pass. All right, I'm done.
So the only concern I'll piggyback off of asking for more time, because they remember, I think we're initially supposed to have it in January, and now we're going to have it in hopefully February. And then if you at those 90 days,
that's
then,
May.
Then all of a sudden you get to the General Assembly. And if that's in June, remember, then they now have.
They're in budget season.
They're in budget season. So the longer it takes to get to us, and I've said to Senator Lockman, you get 10 seconds to shoot a free throw. You don't have to take all 10 seconds, right? Like, I think the sooner we get it, then if we do need more time, we have it. But pushing us up against that timeline with the General Assembly meeting is also a factor in that as
well. And I thought that they were going to be here to present tonight. So I want this on the record, especially after everything I've said. I applaud the work that they are trying to do. And I know that what they're trying to do is difficult work. And I recognize that because they are advocating for generational change, that they are trying to make sure that every possible voice that they perceive can or needs to be heard has an opportunity. Here's my problem. When I listened to what happened in that room last week, it was clear that most of the people in that room had not heard of Reading, that has been doing this work for a number of years. And what they heard was absolutely given to them in a way that it gave a perception that is not what they're trying to do. So when we start having conversations, what are our conversations trying to accomplish? Because we won't have enough time to educate the uneducated about what's been going on for the last 5 or 6 years. Ours is going to be, we really want to hear from you, but there's been a group that has brought in other groups and has spent a whole lot of money to come up with a lot of information. The State Board of Education has been given this work product and this mandate and this deadline to get it done. So I'm on the fence about having more than one. I just think we ought to have one, but it needs to be tightly controlled. That's Griffin. That's Griffin. The end.
The other thing is, and I was prepared to speak at a couple of the meetings and I've chose not to for a specific reason. The feel in the room is that the comments, so first of all, when Matt and Tizzy present, actually let me rephrase that, when Senator Lockman and Matt Dead present, they know, everybody in the room knows their perspective. Not that they have a choice, but they know that they're there to support redistricting. Me and my role comes across the same way. Like, they know I'm going to stand up there and say something in support of, but the sense that I've gotten in all of the meetings, even the ones that were more receptive, was it's falling on deaf ears. Like, we're giving you an opportunity to talk, but it's falling on deaf ears, and it was exacerbated earlier this week. And so, it, as a matter of fact, in my prepared statement, I mentioned, without using his name, Mr. Griffin. You know, like everybody talked, like we've been here before. Like we're obviously, I joke that he's 59, I'm 59, I'm just born next year or so. And so, but when I, when my comment was that we've been here before and we got through it and we're acting as if like the Brandywine School District in this example has been around since the beginning of time. No, it's been through multiple changes. And my one of my best friends of 42 years, I don't know him if that doesn't happen. So it's not, there's good things that happen when you allow folks from different places to come together. And I just don't understand why they we're not focusing on the positive that this opportunity presents versus the negatives. And that's but the last line in my statement said that we're focusing on imperfections and not on possibilities.
But I think one of the challenges that Reading has is that the people that they've been presenting their options to are not the people that are dissatisfied with the current system. One of the lasting things I had in the program I took for organization development was Beckhardt's change formula. And it, that has stuck with me for years. And the formula says that in order to overcome resistance, because change generally generates resistance, you first have to have dissatisfaction. And a significant amount of dissatisfaction for people to say, this is really bad, I want to change. You then have to have a vision. And the vision has to be clear, it has to be detailed, so that people will say, ah, I can see it, I can understand it, I'd like to go there. And then the third piece, the first steps, that you build in the first step so you see an initial level of success to keep the ball moving. And I don't think at this point we have accomplished or they have accomplished the dissatisfaction piece, because you heard it very clearly the other night in Brandywine. Those people were satisfied with the way their district was and the way their children are being educated. And so as the, even though they mouth, yes, all children deserve a high quality education, they're not dissatisfied enough to say, I want to change it and make a difference so we can get to the vision, Reading, that you're trying to share. I don't know how we get that level of dissatisfaction. It just, I said I wasn't going to say anything. I was appalled by that meeting. I was absolutely appalled by the comments that were made during that meeting. Oh, you know, we bring those kids in, our test scores are going to go down. Oh my God, my property values are going to decrease. What a pile of garbage. And that said to me exactly what you said, Meredith. It said to me, not in my backyard, not in my backyard.
One person said, give the people in the city of Wilmington agency, give them the money that they need so they can get the education that their kids need there. And I literally said, so what you said is give them whatever they need, just don't bring them here.
Yeah.
Just don't bring. And I think that Representative Chukwocha responded well. He is a Brandywine School District resident. He represents that district. He lives across the street from one of those schools. And he said, please understand, because of the Neighborhood Schools Act, your two schools in the city are not what you think Lombardi is, or pick one of your other schools. Those schools look like their neighborhoods with all of the things that go on in those neighborhoods. So if you're going to talk about Brandywine, talk about the whole of Brandywine, not the piece that you're trying to preserve for yourself. I'm going to go back to what I said, and then I'm going to stop because the meeting would be over if I wasn't talking right now. So to your point about what the problem is, I think when we center ourselves in everything, then the other person never matters. And so when I see education or my school district that way, my school district, rather than seeing education as being a common good, I want an educated citizenry. Why? Because if he or she can actually elevate themselves, it helps us all. That movie sentence that I'm trying to find a way that we as a board can actually sponsor screenings throughout the state and have conversations about that movie speaks to that. Mm-hmm. When education is not working, and this is about literacy, which is, it's a powerful movie if you still have not seen it. When that's not working, it hurts us all. And I think that's the piece that's not Redding's job to do, but that's the piece that for a whole bunch of stuff in the nation we live in is missing. That it's not just about me, it's about us. And if you're not getting it, then at some point I'm not going to get it either.
That's what gets at dissatisfaction, what he just said. Mm-hmm. When everybody realizes that some people not learning means we're all not okay.
Not learning. Yeah.
That's because you're saying, well, when is there going to be holistic dissatisfaction? They don't change without that. What you just said is the path to that. They're not dissatisfied with it yet. But the movie sentence does make a good case.
Yeah, absolutely.
To wake some, bring a different perspective in.
I want to thank the two of you for your experience and knowledge on this, because I live in Southern Delaware, and if you hadn't opened up my eyes on a lot of the things that are said and going on, I wouldn't have noticed it. But I thank you for that. And we'll probably have to rely on some of your thoughts and go with that. But, you know, when we make this decision, we're going to be clear, concise, and we're going to be unified. We're going to stand shoulder to shoulder with our decision.
Sean, I will say this, though. Like, it is happening in Sussex as well. It's just at a different level for different reasons, right? Like, and again, we could talk about this, and we'll be here till next month's meeting. I think we still focus on the fact that whatever the highest is, right? Like the Representative Chipotle said, like the best schools in that district that we were in on Monday is 50%. Well, that still means 50% aren't. And so that's where we're hanging our hat on 50%. And I shared, we just did a podcast Wednesday, him, the mayor, and I, and I mentioned this comment that we should always be looking at the delta of proficiency. Wherever you are, right? If you're at 70%, there's 30% of the families still who need you to do something to help. And so if we don't focus on the delta of your proficiency, that's a shame on you as a leader, as an educator. So I'll leave it at that, because like I said, we can talk about this forever. It's obviously something that's very important to me.
Okay. I just have one thing I like to point out. Hey, everybody. Based off the comments that were made by the board members, I would just like to direct all the board members to review Title 14, Section 1026, because that section speaks directly to the powers of the State Board of Education when it comes to this redistricting. And I think you will all be pleasantly surprised at the amount of latitude you all actually have. I'd like to draw your attention to subsection D that says that the State Board of Education may change or alter boundaries of school districts in New Castle County in a manner consistent with some or all of the redistricting recommendations made by the Redding Consortium. So you don't have to follow everything that they say. You have to, basically, it's consistent with some of them, doesn't have to be consistent with all of them. Furthermore, if you don't approve of the plan, you must submit in writing to the chairperson of the consortium the reasons why it wasn't approved. So the ability of this State Board of Education to dictate what occurs in some way, shape, or form is quite powerful. So I would just recommend that all the board members review that section of code. If you have any questions, let me know. But I think that, like I said, you can leverage the authority you have and the fact that you have to approve of these things in a way to effectuate change that you think will benefit the masses, especially the children in New Castle County and in Wilmington.
I appreciate that you said that. I've read it a couple of times, and I read the language that you just said. My interpretation of it was, we're sending you this. You can say yay or nay, but if you say nay, you better have a good reason.
I don't think it's a matter of you better have a good reason if you say no. You just have to explain your reasoning. Because whether or not it's a good reason depends on the person reading it. If they think it's a good reason, you might not disagree or agree. But I think as long as it's well-reasoned and you have support for why you're making that decision, the law requires that to be provided to the consortium to aid them in producing a plan that will get approved by the State Board of Education. And hopefully with that approval, will get approved by the General Assembly and the governor.
Awesome. Thank you.
Say it again, section 14, title 14, section what?
1027. 14 Delaware Code 1026.
Okay. That's my kind of lawyer right there. Yeah. Bring it right in the room.
Is this a decision that we will make at an open meeting, or is it something that we'll meet prior to talk about?
Nothing. Can't do that. We have to stay in open session. Okay. But I think we're going to end up with more meetings, probably a workshop of some sort. We've discussed it. We just haven't formulated it. We're waiting for Reading to get back to us when they're ready to roll.
Correct.
But we have to stay in open session.
But there is an opportunity for us to discuss and talk.
We're going to need it. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. But all of that has to be, we discuss in open session.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I don't have a problem doing it.
Absolutely.
Okay. Anybody else have anything? Tyler?
I do briefly.
Did you read that book yet?
I'll get to it eventually. Okay. Okay. So briefly, going over the events that I've been involved with the last few weeks, I've done a lot with the Public Education Funding Commission, first going back to last Wednesday. I attended the Vision Coalition Equity in Education event at Dell Tech and had the opportunity to deliver the call to action, emphasizing that students deserve to understand the system that shapes their futures, a theme that was central within my speech. Some of the key highlights within that speech included the need of a funding system that reflects students' actual needs, not just their enrollment numbers, the importance of shifting from intention to action after years of discussion, and that students are not just recipients of policy, but we are stakeholders in every decision that is made about our education.
It was a fabulous speech.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Something that I found really powerful about that event, and I think a lot of other commissioners saw it as well, is that students are more interested in this particular topic than we thought ever before. I had the opportunity to speak with students from Aspira, Polytech, Milford and Sussex County, and they spoke to me about the potential benefits. They expressed confusion that I had the opportunity to address, but all of them made it clear that student involvement in this is absolutely necessary. When I'm sitting in these meetings for an hour, 2 hours every month, I was thinking, oh, I'm the only student really paying attention to this. No, they're watching, they're listening, they're taking notes, they're taking their perspective back to their fellow classmates, and they're actively following what we're doing. Then we had the Public Education Funding Commission meeting on Monday. The commission voted to proceed with the hybrid funding model, meaning that we are moving forward with a new structure that blends weighted and need-based elements with a more transparent, updated mechanisms within it. The framework is now being refined and will continue to be refined before the spring vote. Several major components will require finalization before the spring vote, which include final weights, local funding reforms, funding level estimates, and equalization changes. Now, at least leaving the meeting that we've had over the last few weeks, one of the big questions that I am going to be asking in the next few months is particularly regarding our charter schools. Looking at Title 14 and what we have proposed now and the way it is going to interact with our charter school community, I think that there are definitely some parts to look at in terms of provisions that may result in charter schools experiencing changes differently than some districts. I think that we as a commission need to look closely at how this is going to affect all of our students, not just, of course, those that are in traditional school settings. I'm looking forward to finding more clarity on those components as we work to finalize them. Moving forward with that, another big question I think for a lot of people right now also is, we have the funding formula in place that we want to propose. We're working to finalize it. Now, where are we getting the money from? Because we are saying as a commission that we will not lower the amount that each district is receiving as it currently stands. But we're also saying that each student needs more money for the various different ways that have been put in place. So that is one thing that as a commission, I'm looking forward to see us kind of explore and get into more in the next few weeks. And beyond that, I'm also looking forward to the opportunity to hopefully hold student forums and being able to engage with our students more about this particular issue as it develops. Now, looking at a timeline overall, of course, the commission is working over the next few months, with the final vote being hosted in the spring, and then our recommendations are going to be presented to the state legislator following that. I think right now in the current state that we are in, again, the biggest thing that we are, or that we as a commission need to work on, we've explained it to district officials, we've explained it to parents and stakeholders. Now we need to bring it to the students and say, this is what's happening with your public education system, this is how it's going to affect you, and this is how we are working as a commission to be in the best interest of you as students.
Outstanding. I do have something to say. You say as the schools will not lose any money, but there's going to have extra money for the students.
Yes.
Is it going to be state monies, or are they going to rely on the local monies to push? The local funds are very limited in many districts, and many are going to referendum this year because their ESSER funds are used up. And quite honestly, a lot of these schools are cutting it close.
To my understanding, the current situation sits at, in our documentation, we've indicated that we need additional funds from the state legislator, whether that is reallocation or another funding method, is what I'm looking forward to looking into more over the next few weeks.
Got it. Thank you, sir. Great report.
Thank you.
Tyler, I have a quick question. You talked about having conversations with students. First of all, outstanding, sir. Thank you for the work you're doing. You make me feel like I'm slacking. You talked about students wanting to be engaged.
Yes.
Did they talk about what engagement looks like for them? I'm curious as to how grown folk can
at least speaking with students at this event, and then of course after this event, I started engaging with students more about it following the event. They've stated they want more than just the traditional meeting that we host online where it's a bunch of adults talking at them. They want to actually understand what this means for them. And I think that this is a very complex subject. I mean, this has been years in the making that we have finally gotten to the point that we are at now. I think it really means going and meeting students where they are in schools and community spaces and being able to explain to them, this is what this is actually going to do. We know we have all this text and all of this professional language that means whatever it means, but this is how it's going to actually impact you in your everyday life. If you are a student with disabilities that needs additional support, you are getting more funding added to your union because you need more funding than someone that may not. If you are involved in the English language learners programs, you also need support that other students do not need. If you have food insecurity, if you have other issues going on and things that are contributing to your circumstances, you have things that you need that someone else may not need. And I think explaining what this all means in a less, I guess, high level perspective is what is really crucial for our students to be able to understand this is what we're doing.
Thank you. I think this is an opportunity for me to say I think we need to get an underclassman. We talked about this before the meeting. You're a senior. Be nice to have a junior learning from you or whoever else is next so they can step right up to the plate after you graduate and you've moved on to the Naval Academy possibly. But I think it would be something that needs to be looked at. I think we talked about it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'd be a good move. That way we can be hit the road running the next year.
Absolutely. And I think for the first few months of my term as a student member, you spend, I want to say, into September and October understanding this is what my role is and this is what I'm supposed to do and what I'm able to do, but this is how I expand upon what's already been built. And then from there, you kind of take it and go with your own. But at the same time, had I been in this position a year prior, I would have had a lot more time to just take it and be able to go.
That's true. Very true. All right. Anybody, anything else? I got a couple items in we're just going to discuss. Well, we don't have to discuss. I'll just bring them up and then we can move on to something else. Next month, we want to consider the three proposals that we received for the literacy.
Strategic planning.
Strategic planning. If there's any questions, you need to ask Deb or send an email to Kathleen so she can ask Deb. But it's something we need to consider and look at, whether we yay or nay it. And with Meredith in this sentence, I just want to know how we can work this in. It may be time for a committee to do this. It excites me. I haven't seen it. I keep reading about it. I've read as much as I can read on it, I think. But I think this is an opportunity for the state board to partner with this so that everybody has a better understanding of what goes on.
So I had a conversation, a follow-up conversation with the group that brought it here to Delaware for the Diamond State Black Film Festival. And one of the producers, I believe a producer, I could be wrong, of the film is a Delawarean. And they are interested in that kind of thing, but they have some parameters about, you know, what kinds of things they'd like to see associated with a screening of the film. So it's nonpartisan, those kinds of things. I said, well, the state board is nonpartisan, so we don't really have to worry about that. So we're having, they're reaching out to the people who would kind of say, oh yes, we absolutely, please take our film and show it. And I have another meeting on Saturday that'll give me more information, so I'll be able to report a bit more next month. Next month.
It's great. It's great. I like that. But something I really want to see. Is there anything else before we move on to the Secretary's report? Secretary Martin, you're up.
Thank you. You have a written version of my report, but I'm just going to tell you some of my favorite highlights. This is the chance where we get to lift up the work of the department, which is sometimes like, what are you all doing? And how is this going to get the outcomes for kids and this overall statewide education community? I want to say we're very much on the move. And someone was making a little rhyme about our work on the move so that we can improve and improve outcomes for kids. But what I want to share this month is not just, I don't want to just recite what you can see already in the report, but I want to tell you the story that's underneath it. Because it's a story that I perceive in my daily interactions with educators and the students and the families. It's a story of momentum. Educators are doubling down on what matters, and students are beginning to feel the impact, I believe, of our collective work when you work on Tier 1 instruction. We saw a great example from your school at our last board meeting of what growth actually looks like, so we can notice it, name it, and figure out how to invest in it, replicate it, and scale it. So recently we celebrated, we already heard earlier, the incredible professionals who support our schools behind the scenes every day. The work doesn't move without the educational support staff. That's when we honored this year's nominees and recognized Donna Ward from Laurel as our State Education Support Professional of the Year. That was a reminder that our system works because of thousands of unsung heroes that show up with commitment and with heart every day. We always have to remember all of the people that it takes to move Delaware. And then we also saw our Pathway to Your Dreams initiative that earned top honors in the statewide STEM Educator Awards. That recognition wasn't just about a program, it was about a promise that every student beginning in the middle grades deserves to see a future that they can reach for, and that we will build the on-ramps to make those futures real. That's what the Pathways to Dreams recognition that I put in my report makes me think of. You're gonna hear me continue to always talk about early literacy because it remains at the center of everything. 25 districts and charters have now applied for our pre-K through 3 Bridge to Practice grants. And that tells me that our educators, our districts, our superintendents, our school boards are hungry for coaching. They're hungry for leadership development. They want staffing models that will support strong foundational skills for instruction that keep teachers engaged and invigorated to do their work. And the work that's inside these Bridge to Practice grants, it's over $7 million of investment. It's not abstract. It's very concrete about children sitting in classrooms today and having their teachers have improved practice to get improved outcomes as students learn to read and write with confidence. And then you also saw my report, the expansion of the Pro Apprenticeship Program. That's another sign that Delaware is on the move, building a workforce pipeline that's rooted in our own neighborhoods. When you see paraprofessionals and you see Teacher Academy graduates that can become tomorrow's teachers, that means we're not just filling vacancies. We're elevating the talent, and the talent is with the people in the communities that our children already know. It's a grow your own approach that people that are in the communities that children see and they grow into the teaching profession. So that pro apprenticeship program is phenomenal. You also saw in my report the continued growth in AP participation and performance. That is always something to watch and talk about the data that's attached to it, because what matters most to me is inside that AP participation performance data is the Black and Hispanic Latino students' growth. That's what it looks like when opportunity expands. It's not on paper, it's in real lives. And you'll see the data that's in there too. I'm paying attention to the disaggregated AP participation rates and performance rates. It's notable, and it's a signal that we're on the move. across the state, you saw that we're tightening our alignment between CTE credentials and the workforce needs. We can make a credential and then there's no job, or there's jobs and we don't have the CTE. So we're seeing the Head Start centers stand up fully staffed, fully licensed. We're watching our districts adopt the high quality literacy materials aligned to the science of reading. And we're hearing our community voices help shape the modern funding formula that you just got a great summary of, that all of that is putting equity into the fabric of everything we're doing. I think you know that I visit schools all the time, going back to one tomorrow morning. There's 11 in particular that I've just been on a round. I'm starting round two now. The visits are what keep me grounded, keeps my team grounded in the decisions and actions that we make here, whether it's from compliance or investments, the things that we do through our granting authorities and our compliance authorities have to be in the schools. These visits, just last week, I went to Maple Lane Elementary, just as one, where I was watching the teachers use iReady and Acadience. They're using data to guide their small group instruction. And then I get students like leaning into their science of reading phonics routines with joy, meaning, and purpose. So I have to see it in action, because we can't just talk about it. We have to be about it. I got to watch the early literacy practices that are starting to shift the outcomes. And I think that's the heartbeat of the work. It's real classrooms, real teachers, real growth that we can see that does translate into the big lagging indicators moving eventually, but you got to have something that you're watching every day. We're going to welcome educators from across Delaware to our January 10th AI and Innovation Summit. This is where we get to, as a state, talk about our AI and the role in our schools and how we can be a smart, ethical, safe path forward. It's part of our commitment to help our schools understand the opportunities, but also the risks that come with AI, so we can lead with safety and curiosity and responsibility at the center. So put all of it together, the through line is Delaware is not standing still. We're building capacity, we're expanding opportunities, and we're doing steady, the disciplined work that it takes to lead to the student outcomes that our kids deserve. I see our educators moving, I see our students moving, and we're moving right along with them. We have urgency, but you have to do this work with humility and deep commitment to every single learner in the state and remembering who we work for. That's the story side of what's in that report. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the secretary?
I have a quick question. Is anybody from DOE on the Workforce Labor Board?
Yes.
Oh, perfect.
I think so. We have someone on there. Yeah.
Okay.
You were there last week. No? Who was just there? Yes, we do.
Somebody
have someone
is.
On.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Just need to...
One question regarding, I saw in the news this week, partnership with OpenAI.
Mm-hmm.
What is that going to entail? What will that look like?
Well, at the summit that we have on January 10th, we're planning to talk about multiple partners. There's not like one special tool or one tool only. And the risks of AI could outweigh the benefits if you don't do this in a smart way. So, and I'm very well aware of those. In my former role as deputy secretary, we produced the guidance around safe, effective implementation of AI tools. So that agreement that you saw, you'll see others talk about Google, Anthropic, Copilot, Panorama. There's multiple tools and there's multiple vendors out there that are promising the moon. And I believe that it's important to have vision before you have vendors. And it's important to have the right guardrails and to have the roads neatly paved, because a lot of people want to come into Delaware and do business. For that group to come into our state and do business in our schools, what that represents is signing our terms and conditions that are vetted through our generative AI committee that's been working long before I got here. A really strong group of Delawareans led through our department, but across multiple sectors, we've built the terms and conditions for safe. Where are you keeping our data? Are you using student data? Are you teaching your language models? We're making sure, nope, you're not using our data to teach your models. Nope, you're not offshoring our data. Yes, the FERPA is being addressed. So the kinds of things that we know need to be locked down before you get to do any business in Delaware. That's why I say thank you to our attorneys for negotiating that agreement. What we signed was a statewide agreement, so this agency can begin to use it in a walled-off garden with the protections that we need. It's not for students. It's for, at this point, for adults to reduce administrative burden and to help personalize learning and dig into the actual benefits that are possible. That's if you bring it in the right way. The analogy I use is a You could come into Delaware on a dirt road with no guardrails and you're going to have a lot of problems. If we pave the freeway and we put up the guardrails, come do business, but you're going to sign our T's and C's before you come here. If you can't sign what we're asking you to do, indemnification, there's multiple legal parameters that we are asking for that are well known. This is, we're not making this up, but I think some of the AI vendors could assume that you, if you don't know what to be asking for, they're not going to tell you. Mm-hmm. And it'll be buried on page 726, section 4. Yeah, Alex is laughing because he knows the lawyers are going to, they're gonna, Carla did a great job helping us, like, ah, no, we see that in there. And so I believe Delaware is going to be a model for the country about how to bring AI tools into education in a safe way, not replacing people, but it's a tool that people use to improve outcomes for students. We can do this the right way. So the vision before vendor, and yet I'm signing vendor things like this is, so if a district now decides they want to use OpenAI or ChatGPT, they don't have to go through 19 different contracts. We have done the high level terms and conditions, legal parameters through DTI. Then a district, of course, has their own AI policies as well. They have to go locally as well, but we've paved the road. Now people can start driving on it and the guardrails are up. There'll be a few more vendors that we can say statewide, these are trusted sources to begin to explore, but make them your own. The teachers, we have incredible super users in Delaware, some teachers that are really using this tool, these tools in powerful ways. We will be featuring them at our AI summit. We'll be talking about the path forward, and then ultimately we'll have an assurance lab where any AI vendor that wants to come into our state has to be vetted through that. So we, you know, keep teachers and their decisions at the center of it, keep students at the center of it, and keep the safety and security. We know what to do. We just have to do it. So we're leading the vision on that in the summit. I hope you all come to the summit. Our governor will be there to help open the day and cast the vision for Delaware to lead the country on how to do safe and effective, ethical use of AI in our classrooms as the tool and the power that it can be. No silver bullets. We don't believe in those, but we do believe in good tools.
Any further questions for Secretary Martin? All right, we shall move on to formal public comment. Time has been set aside at this point in the agenda for general public comment. Ms. Smith, has anyone signed up to provide public comment?
Yes, sir, we have two.
All right, we will hear from speakers with a sign-up sheet who are present in the meeting room in person first. Then we'll recognize speakers logged in via the URL in order they have signed up in the chat box. Comments will be limited to 2 minutes for individuals and 3 minutes for organizations. As a reminder, the board typically will not respond to questions or engage in a dialogue with those offering comments during the board meeting. Ms. Smith.
First, we have Andrew Ellis. So we'll go ahead and start the 2 minute timer and then you can introduce yourself.
Welcome.
My name is Andrew Ellis and I'm a paraprofessional with teacher duties at Brandywine High School in an autism classroom and severe disabilities. I have done everything the state has asked me to do to get certified. I have passed special education practice too. I have over a 3.0 GPA in my undergrad. I have a job in a critical needs area in a public school in Delaware, and I even passed a secondary social studies practice. So finally, I felt the ARTC door was going to be open for me until it wasn't. In Delaware, you can't do special education in autism. So for me to successfully go into an ARTC program, I would have to leave my job, do special education and his social studies in a consultative role, and then go back and hopefully my job would be there. What's even more frustrating is Regulation 1573, particularly 1.13, teachers of students of autism and students with severe disabilities. That regulation, which was added in 2020, says an educator shall hold one content area certification. However, state statute 1220 states in regards to special education teachers, practice two testing requirements, applicants teaching special education in core content areas are required to take the Praxis 2 test. I don't teach a core content. If the General Assembly intended for every special education teacher, including those in severe disabilities and autism settings, to hold a content area certificate, the way it stated it in 1220. So I'm asking the board, what statute statutory authority does the state have to make educators of students with autism and severe disabilities take a content-related test? Because 1573 and state statute 1220 do not align. Thank you.
Sure.
Next, we have Kendall Massive.
Real quick, because it was this is Delaware. Mr. Ellis taught my voice a while ago.
Oh,
and did very well with my voice. So, thank you. Good evening. I'm Kendall Massett, Executive Director for the Delaware Charter Schools Network. And I want to thank the department and the board for your work this evening. I was listening on my phone, so I did not miss any of the charter stuff as I was driving down here. To be clear, charter authorization is not easy. And I want to acknowledge that here tonight. The idea that charter authorization could be moved to a new body easily shows to me that there is not a clear understanding of the hard work that all of you do as the authorizer of 22 of our charter school, our 24 charter schools every day. Tonight, in your role as a charter authorizer, you took part in two critical components of the charter school lifecycle. As you know, charter schools operate under a time-bound contract, their charter, which is renewed periodically. In Delaware, charters may span 5 or 10 years, depending on the school. Our charter renewal applications require the same level of rigor and overview as the initial charter application. It involves reviewing the commitments the school made to their authorizer, and more importantly, to the students and families that they serve. The Charter School Accountability Committee, or CSAC as we call it, conducted a thorough process through reading their application, reviewing the data, asking questions, and hearing directly from school teams, including leaders, staff, boards, students, and families. I wanted to say that because listening, if you listened to that conversation, you would have thought that you were like, oh, hey, would you renew them? Sure, we'll renew them. There wasn't a lot of discussion, which is fine because it was had already at CSAC. Through that transparent and thoughtful process, you determined that Campus Community and Providence Creek Academy earned their 6th and 5th charter renewals, respectively. Thank you for honoring the integrity of the renewal process. The second major action taken tonight was the vote to place a school on formal review. Formal review is one of the only oversight tools available to you during the life of a charter outside of the renewal process. This is an objective and transparent process to investigate concerns, assess performance, and determine whether a school is fulfilling the promises made in its charter. I know that the formal review process can feel intimidating, but it's not. I loved what Leroy said about his analogy for a check the engine light. That's exactly what this is. Please forgive me for going over. We've had several charter schools go through this process, and they came out on the other side because this is not a punitive measure. It's an opportunity to work through challenges and those opportunities. I appreciate your willingness to engage in this responsibility. This is an integral part of the accountability that charter schools agreed to since the beginning, and students benefit when authorizers carry out their duties with transparency, fairness, and objectivity. I look forward to working with you as a non-voting member of CSAC during this process to ensure that promises made are promises kept. Finally, on behalf of the charter community and the families that we serve, we wish you a very happy holiday season. We're grateful for your continued partnership and the thoughtful work you do on behalf of Delaware Charter Schools and this school year, the 19,050 students that they serve. And unless something changes, we will see you in January at MOT Charter to continue our conversation about the work that we do and that you do. And finally, Happy New Year. We'll see you next year.
Thank you.
Yes, our next regular meeting is January 15th at the MOT Charter School. That'll be in New Castle County. You owe me 51 seconds off your presentation next month.
I'll give it.
But anyway, I want everybody to have a happy holiday, a Merry Christmas, whatever, however you celebrate it, please do so. And with that, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn tonight's meeting.
Grissom, so move.
Simmons, second.
Now that we're adjourned, if you would like to help yourself to some things to take home, I made homemade fudge. That has nuts in it, so if you have a nut allergy, don't take the fudge. And then chocolate chip pretzels. So I don't know if I made enough, but it's homemade. Enjoy. I love to bake. I just did it because I love to bake, and I appreciate it.
Simmons, second. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
It is.
Oh, I thought you adjourned already.
6:41 p.m. This meeting is adjourned. Safe travels, folks. Thank you for coming.